1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. And a happy birthday, of course, to Michael Remus. You'll hear from him a little bit later on in the program, more than likely. And it is his, what is it? How old is he? 21?
26.
26.
21.
Wow. He's getting old. Anyways, a happy birthday to Michael Remus. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight's shows featuring Tommy Savitt are both sold out at Rumors. Coming up next week is J. Chris Newberg. Later on in the month, The Incredible Boris is going to be in town, a concert series event. He's quite funny if you've never seen The Incredible Boris. He's a comedian hypnotist. And then big news regarding Rob Schneider. All of the shows that they had booked for Rob Schneider, the Thursday night at 8 o'clock, the two Friday shows, and the two Saturday shows, sold out pretty much instantaneously. Rumors has added some additional shows for Rob Schneider, an additional 10:30 p.m. show on the Thursday night, and two shows on the Sunday, 7 o'clock, and 9:45. So three additional shows added for Rob Schneider. Those tickets will go as quickly as the last ones did. So you can get in touch with Rumors at 488-4520 to get tickets for Rob Schneider. That's at the end of February. And, of course, you can also visit the website to buy tickets through the website at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Even though those first few Rob Schneider nights sold out, Sheldon still got us a table, though, right?
No. Sheldon prefers not to acknowledge that he even knows who you are.
Not true, in fact. When you were gone, Sheldon had something very nice to say to me. Anyways, I know you're...
Let's get on to the fantasy hockey. We're going to start with the forwards for the next couple segments.
Do it.
And then we are going to be joined on the line by Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey to talk forwards in addition. So the first 45 minutes or so is going to be dedicated to forwards. Then we're going to spend the next 45 minutes on defensemen. And then we're going to wrap up the last 2 hours of this talking about goaltenders. You have first overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably you're not drafting a defenseman or a goaltender.
That's right.
Who is your first overall forward that you're going to draft?
Last year, I told anybody that would listen to take Evgeny Malkin, and it turned out that it was the right pick. Again this year, you've got a situation, and again, just for the poolies out there, we're going to start off not getting into the hardcore goals are worth more, penalties, minutes. Sure. If you're in a straight
That's a good point, Ezzy. When we're talking about pools from now on, we're assuming that you're in that most pools are going to be the standard. Goals are worth a point. Assists are worth a point. Obviously, if your rules are different,
I'll be in a pool. I'll be three pools this year. One will be regular points, like a goal and assist, or just points, and only players and defensemen. If you want, and a pool will have more points for goals, and then there'll be defenseman requirements. Another pool will be kind of a rotisserie pool. So you have
Hustlers having a pool that we're in.
That's right. Yep. So we'll qualify it if we want to talk about otherwise. As he thinks Malkin, I personally think Steven Stamkos because of the goals.
Yep.
And I realize we just said, points, but I think Stamkos can compete with him in terms of points, and the goals give him an advantage because some pools, goals will be worth more. Steven Stamkos getting into his prime years, not that Evgeny Malkin isn't. I just think Stamkos would be my number one, but it wouldn't be by too much. And I think the next question you have to ask, and I'm sure you're probably going to ask this, Drew, is, Crosby.
Yeah. Why?
Well, Crosby's the most talented of them.
Neither of you mentioned Sidney Crosby, and it didn't seem like either of you had even really given any thought to Crosby as your first overall.
Drew, but when you end up lucky enough to get the first overall pick in your pool, and you can have, say Crosby and Malkin have tremendous years.
Right.
Together.
Yep.
On the same squad.
Different lines, though, obviously.
Right. And sometimes they play together, but Crosby gets 15 more points than him. They both have a great year. Is the 15 more points worth the risk because of the concussion? That's the question. 50 more points, by the way, is a lot in a 48-game season.
Sure. People forget, Richie, last year Crosby had 37 points in 22 games. Just absolutely ridiculous. Oh, yeah. So, again, if you basically have to, if you're going to take Crosby, you're in a hockey pool, and you have the first overall pick, and obviously that's any position you want to, that's the position you want to be in if you're in a hockey pool. You take Sidney Crosby, and you just don't even think about the concussions. You just say, oh, no, he's good to go. He's healthy. He's going to get 120 points. Well, this year it's going to be a short season, so maybe he'll get 70 points. You got to keep that in mind, too. We haven't even really gone into that, but you look at, everyone's going to dust off the pool guides and start to look at last year's stats, but you have to look at it like a 48-game season. Go back to 1994. Lindros and Yager tied for the scoring lead with 70 points. And then right. Zamenhof had 65, I believe. So you're going to look at around that probably. You know, the top scorer is going to be around 70 points. So, you know, Stamkos, if he gets 30 goals around there, that's going to be an incredible season. But you have to, when you're thinking about these top guys, all these guys are great picks, but you're going to have to consider, you know, the amount of goals a guy's going to get. Stamkos, can he repeat his season from last year? I think he can. And Malkin is going to be playing with James Neal, obviously, again. And Crosby's going to be with his usual teammates, Pascal Dupuis and Chris Kunitz. And by the way, Dupuis was, talk about guys that are, you know, good picks to go with the top guys. Dupuis is another guy that, you know, is going to benefit greatly from Crosby. But all that's probably what you're looking at. And then there's going to be players that are a few tiers under there. I don't think Claude Giroux is essentially up there, but up there with the top three. But really, those are your options. And I think Richie would probably jump in here and say that the reason why Crosby doesn't get it is just because there are those concerns that he might not play a full season.
Let me ask you this question. If it's not those top three, if it's not one of Malkin, Crosby, or Stamkos, who jumps up there and takes over that lead? You know, assuming of, you know, obviously injuries are a factor. But, you know, let's say that, you know, those guys are all relatively healthy and everybody's relatively healthy. You know, who is a guy that might be, you know, between spots 5 through 10 in your mind that can take that leap to overtake what seems to be a pretty clear-cut top three?
Well, Giroux is in the conversation, as he mentioned, and then you got the Sedin brothers.
So you're still high on the Sedin brothers?
Yeah, I mean, they just produce points. That's all they do. Daniel will get more goals. Henrik will get more assists, but they score. Corey Perry is a goal scorer. Alex Ovechkin is the wild card.
Yep.
And I think the guy that really has to be in that conversation now is John Tavares. He may even be at the top of that list for me. That's how good he is. And, you know, another season for him, just getting better. I believe he finished 9th in the scoring race last year. Drew, you can pull that up, 9th or 10th.
Yeah.
A guy who's reliable, plays a lot. You know, you can count on him. Doesn't play a really volatile game, which I assume would limit his injury risk a little bit more, in my opinion. But Ovechkin, in terms of the skill, in terms of the talent, is yeah, go ahead, Drew.
John Tavares last year, 82 games played for the New York Islanders, 81 points.
And what was he in the...
That would put him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th overall in the NHL.
And you look at Alexander Ovechkin, well, there's a couple of things to take into account here. I think the biggest thing to take into account, well, one is his motivation. Always has to be a question. Two is, hey, Adam Oates is there. No Dale Hunter. This is an offensive coach. A guy who's arguably, you know, one of the top three or four best passers of all time. So will he have Ovechkin return to his old form? So
I mean,
it's hard to get out of the top five, Drew, without considering, you know, Ovechkin at 4.
Well, I mean, Alex Ovechkin last year finished with 65 points in 78 games. The list of not what I would describe as household names who were ahead of Alex Ovechkin in scoring is lengthy. So if you're, I mean, isn't the bust potential for Alex Ovechkin as a top five pick almost too great?
Depends on what you think of Adam Oates.
As a head coach?
Yeah.
You think Adam Oates is sort of going to take the reins off of Alex Ovechkin?
I think so. I know, obviously,
when
Bruce Boudreau near the end was, you know, Ovechkin started his struggles, and motivation's a factor for sure, I think. But I think Oates gives you the tantalizing option of him having a crazy year again. And you know, the thing about Ovechkin is, you know, he has the potential. So it's been the puck on net, getting the puck on net, the levels he used to have, and increasing his play. What's Nick Backstrom's condition?
Yep.
That obviously is a factor as well.
Nick Backstrom, who's a little banged up, he went for some testing. Yep. Apparently wasn't a concussion, but it does sound like it's in the neck and head range, which obviously isn't a good thing.
Nick Backstrom's a great player, And obviously he's had the struggles a little bit lately. But what about who they brought in for Cody Eakin?
You're talking about Mike Ribeiro.
A great passer.
Let me ask you, back to Ovechkin for a second. Let me ask you this, sort of following up on that. You take him top five.
Yep.
And, you know, I just go back to the bust potential in that, you know, best case scenario, you get a top five, you know, you take him fifth overall, and maybe he should have gone second overall.
Okay.
But you could get him, take him top five, and he could also finish, you know, 35th in the league in scoring.
Okay, are there other guarantees?
I want to step in right here. The guarantees, to answer your question, you're asking us, Drew, last year was a bust for Ovechkin.
Yeah, is the risk worth it?
There's absolutely no chance that he busts this year, and there's no chance he'll be anywhere near 35. I'll guarantee it, you play it back next year. I think if you get Ovechkin at fifth overall, it'll be a really good pick. I think he's the only the elite guys in the NHL right now are in a class of their own. Malkin, Crosby, Stamkos. Tavares, Richie mentioned, those three guys, I mean, those are three... I think you can say that those guys are a step above. And who knows what will happen. They're not necessarily going to be one, two, three. But I can guarantee you probably two of those three guys will be in the top three. Mm-hmm. And I think Ovechkin this year, and I'll go on the record and say it, I think Ovechkin is going to have a bounce back year. And I go even further. I think he could even be second or third in scoring. I don't think there's any risk that he'll bust.
So you can see Alex Ovechkin, you know, the top three guys in terms of, you know, in terms of scoring last year.
This is a guy that scored 65 goals.
Let me ask you right before you get into that, Drew.
Okay.
He's playing 20 games, approximately, right? 20 games against, or 18 games against his division.
Against the Southeast Division, yeah. Okay, so 18 games exactly against his Southeast Division opponents.
Let's look at the defenses in the Southeast.
Okay, because that's a fair... And you have to look at the matchups he's going up against, so that's a totally fair comparison to make.
The Jets.
Well, the Jets are without Zach Bogosian for probably at least the first 5 weeks of the season. Yep. Four weeks, 5 weeks. Not an intimidating defense.
In any event, I mean, are any of the guys on the Jets locked down great defenders?
No.
Okay, so what about Carolina? Puck-moving guys, guys who can skate. Falk, yeah, good young defenseman. McBain and guys like Pickett and other guys. You know, they got Gleason there as a good lockdown guy.
But there's no elite defenseman there.
Florida.
We know there's no elite defenseman there. I mean, you know, Gudbrandsson's got a lot of potential.
Not there yet. And you know, will he get there? There's questions. But not there yet. But talent, but not there yet. Okay, so there's Florida. And then you look at the other team, Tampa.
Yeah.
Tampa's gotten better on the back end over the offseason, and Hedman's certainly coming to his own, so maybe some matchup there. But overall, you're looking at 18 games against teams that really don't have Zdeno Chara on their squad.
But he played 24 games against those same opponents last year and didn't really do anything.
That's true, and it's a good point. But you take that into account, the matchups into account, the new coach into account, a new style into account, a new attitude into account.
I think last year was an aberration.
But the year before, he wasn't great either.
I appreciate your comment about it being an aberration, but it's sort of been a two-year aberration, if it truly is an aberration. It might be getting to the point of a pattern, and this is what we need to expect from Alex Ovechkin during the regular season. And, you know, last year he was good during the playoffs, and he took the Capitals further than many people had anticipated.
Yeah, it's been a two-year aberration. 32 goals in 2010-11, 38 goals in 2011-12. But again, the guy who scored in his first 5 years, 52, 46, 65, 56, and 50. So, you know, hey, I will say this. He was tearing it up in Dynamo.
If you're in a hockey pool, take Ovechkin in the top five. It'll be a good pick.
I think you got to really take all those factors into account, and it makes for an interesting top few this year. It's not the old Gretzky years, you know?
Yeah, it certainly isn't. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Gus Katsaros, pro scouting coordinator for McKean's Hockey. We're going to continue this conversation regarding your fantasy forwards. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest NHL, CBA, and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Gus Katsaros. He's the pro scouting coordinator for McKean's Hockey. He joins us to talk fantasy forwards. Gus, good afternoon. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for joining us, Gus. Gus, we were talking about this off-air. We thought we'd start the first question for you with this for you. You know, if you have two players who are sort of pretty even skill-wise, you can go either way in terms of who to draft. Would you lean to the player who has been playing, say, overseas, or would you pick the guy who hasn't really been been skating in game day conditions?
Well, I guess the automatic answer is you want somebody that's fresh and able to just kind of jump into game shape. But I feel that it's not as clear-cut as that, only because I feel that a player that may not necessarily have been playing in an active league has probably kept themselves in game shape. And across the league, I think what you'll end up seeing is a bunch of players that have that similar makeup. So you're going to have some players that are hot off the start, but then the rest of the league will eventually catch up. And, you know, these are professional athletes. It's not like they're slobs and having, you know, like sitting on the couch eating bonbons a la Peg Bundy. Like, they're active. They're working out. They're still skating. They're doing something. So the decision isn't as easy. I think that it would be more from an element of the star player. Star players, you could pick pretty much anyone. When you start getting down into the depths, you might want to lean towards somebody that has been actively playing because the skill set just isn't the same. So you want somebody that's more game-ready off the bat.
Gus, last segment we were talking about kind of the first overall pick off the board, and we obviously realize that there are, you know, pools that, you know, some reward points, some reward more points for goals, some are rotisserie pools. But just overall, who, if you had that first overall pick, the coveted first overall pick in the hockey pool, who would you take?
Evgeny Malkin.
Why?
One, for the reason that, A, he has been playing, so that's a good thing. It's not a big factor, but since we were just talking about it, two, it's just because he's just so skilled. I mean, here you got a stud in pretty much every single category. You got a goal scorer, a great distributor. He's getting some help with Sidney Crosby back, which will kind of alleviate some of the tighter, harder defenses that he might have to play against. He has great support on the wings and James Neal and probably maybe some things with Chris Kunitz. There's a lot of factors. And Malkin's skill set alone is just elite. It's elite of elite and the best in the NHL at this present moment. Crosby may have that one advantage of being a better, it's hard to kind of say a better overall player, but he might. But the concussions and all that past history just doesn't give me the confidence to pick a first overall.
We also had a debate last segment in terms of Alexander Ovechkin. Obviously, he's had 2 years that, you know, for any other NHLer, they've been successful, but for him, they've really been a, you know, regression in terms of production. Where do you come out on him with a new coach and Adam Oates and, you know, some a good performance overseas?
You know, two things about Ovechkin, and this is specific. One, you know, coming off of the season where he scored 60-plus goals, you could see the type of player Ovechkin was. He was not just explosive and dangerous on every shift. He was dead set on getting hard to that net. Mm-hmm. It's almost like with a building full of people, you could hear him just cutting through the ice. So the will to get to the net and to score was, I feel, greater back then. Over the years, he seems to have rounded out into a more team-oriented game, tried to become a bit more defensively responsible. That's not to say that his defensive game has improved, but the responsibility may have improved. And it took a little bit of the sting out of him. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think any player has really benefited any more than playing overseas than Ovechkin has, because there's no pressure on him like there was with the Washington Capitals. And he can go out and be that dominant, get the puck to the net, score, rekindle that fire that he had during that 60-goal season and start applying that now again. I feel that what we're going to end up seeing is not just from a change of coaching perspective. I think that Ovechkin really has to rediscover that fire, get hard to the net, really start to provide, to get back and dip into that dominant mode that made him such a primo goal scorer. And that's what I feel you're going to get out of Ovechkin this year.
Gus, John Tavares had a career year last year, 81 points. He's top 10 in the NHL in scoring. He, in my mind, you know, he took, and I think you'd agree with this, he took the next step. He's an elite player. He already was, but his numbers backed it up. Who do you think this year would be a candidate for an already good player who's going to take the step and the next step and become an elite player, similar to what John Tavares did last year?
Probably we're looking at Jordan Eberle out of Edmonton. Here you got a player that is just, you know, he's taken that one step getting into the NHL, and now you can see with clear-cut dominance in the AHL that he's ready to take that higher step. And I feel that Jordan Eberle will probably be that one player that you're going to see just shine above all others.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Gus Katsaros. He's the pro scouting coordinator for McKean's Hockey. Gus, people always love to talk sleepers and busts, you know, who to target, who to avoid, that sort of thing. First question will be two or three sleepers that may not be readily apparent to most people that they should be targeting, whether it's in the mid-round or the later rounds of their draft.
Well, I'll give you a few names there, but just so I don't feel that there's anything as there's no such thing as a sleeper anymore. There's way too much information for everybody to peruse through. So I think it's more a matter of value, and it's kind of how you described it. Someone in the mid rounds or the later rounds that you feel may have a better potential than the slot that you're drafting him in. So that's kind of how I'm looking at sleepers. So a few players that right off the bat can make a bigger impact. Nino Niederreiter, playing for the New York Islanders, has had a fantastic AHL season so far. And, you know, he's ready to play in the top six, and that's a player to make sure to keep an eye on. Teddy Purcell out of Tampa Bay, and P.A. Parenteau gets a nice leading role in Colorado. So those are three guys right off the bat that I feel would are probably going to slip a little into the in your draft, and you could probably get them pretty cheap, pretty late. Two more players that I feel have a very good potential of producing more than people believe. One would be Rich Peverly, who is just so dynamic and can play any position and can kind of slot into higher or lower rosters. He's so dynamic that way that you know that he can be productive for you. And Jiří Tolusti from Carolina, he made some great lengths, some great strides towards the end of the season last year. And Kirk Muller was really praising him towards the way that he approached his game. So Jiří Tolusti might be one of those guys that everybody really underrates.
Gus, on the other hand, obviously people like to talk and sleepers, and those are a number of good suggestions. What about guys you think might quote-unquote bust or not achieve the level of success that some people expect for them?
Well, that's a little tough to say, too. Like, I felt that Jaromír Jágr was the best during his prime, but I really wouldn't. I wouldn't draft Jaromír Jágr. Like, he just doesn't provide that element of being an elite player anymore. And I know that he'd probably slip a little further along in the drafts. I'd leave it for somebody else. He's too injury prone, and things that are on the negative side that kind of lead me away. I wouldn't draft Jágr. Eric Fehr is another one who never really panned out as a really big scorer from an NHL perspective, and he kind of has seemed to drop into and let's just say a lower roster abyss. He's just not be the dynamic guy that everybody expected out of him. I think that Matt Stajan, obviously, you know, he used to get some pretty good minutes. Now I think he's kind of fallen out of favor. And, you know, players that I feel sometimes may end up playing a little higher than they can. Mike Fisher in Nashville, I feel that he's a good player. He's a good all-around player, but I don't feel that he's that second-line guy that is going to produce those kind of numbers. So you might be taking a bit of a risk drafting him. Just be careful about where you draft these guys, not necessarily don't draft these guys. And then maybe another one, too, would be Kyle Okposo. I would expect a lot more out of him, but I'm just not seeing some kind of a breakthrough, and I feel that what you're going to see is this is the best of the best that you're going to end up getting out of him.
Gus, earlier in the interview, you mentioned, you know, the late rounds and being careful of who you're drafting in the late rounds and the value. And, you know, me speaking personally, you know, you get into the late rounds of hockey pool, you start thinking of rookies and, you know, maybe taking a flyer on a rookie. Two-part question, who's the first rookie you're going to take, and who after that, who is the next best rookie that you should take in your hockey pool?
Ooh, well, there's, you know, this year is pretty strange only because there's a lot of really good candidates. If I had to make that one decision, the first rookie would probably be Michael Granlund, who will be dressing up with the Minnesota Wild. He's just shown that he's not just professional hockey ready. He's ready to step in and make a contribution for the Wild. Number two would have to be, you know, probably Neil Yakupov, just because I feel that there's such a dynamic young core there, and he's going to be given every opportunity to succeed as a first overall pick. So 1-2 would be Granlund and Yakupov. That doesn't mean that there's a lot of other young, really good players that can make some pretty good impact. Again, though, if the question was in regards to where in the draft to pick them, that becomes a bit more complicated. If it's just a simple, who's the first rookie, Granlund first, Yakupov second.
Gus, final question for you. You've written about, first off, the Jets' schedule was leaked yesterday, so Winnipeg fans went a little bit crazy, got to see which games they'd be able to draft in their ticket drafts, but you've done extensive work in terms of talking about the Jets' travel schedule and in terms of, you know, back-to-backs and how far they have to go, considering they're once again, as you and I discussed, in the Eastern Conference, which to me makes absolutely no sense. But can you provide a commentary kind of on the Jets' alleged schedule and what you see for the travel upcoming?
I haven't actually seen any of the leaks from the Winnipeg schedule, but I will be getting into it once the entire schedule is released. There was an anomaly with the Winnipeg Jets last season in that, you know, here you have an organization that really should have been in the West, but they were still in the East. So some of the there was an element in their scheduling that could be an advantage and a disadvantage. For the Jets, it became a distinct advantage where they ended up playing 17 games where their opponents had played the night before while the Jets were rested. So the Jets had not played the previous night. Oh. And they amassed a great little record of 13-3-0-1. Now, you look at that, and that's 27 points. That's a great chunk of your production just to try to make it into the playoffs. But when you look at it from another perspective, too, on December the 1st, they had 24 points, good enough for 13th in the East. But that great December run that they had was highlighted by six games where they ended up playing teams that have been had played the night before. Five of those games featured the team actually traveling into Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a bit of an advantage. And you know, this year, that can, again, it didn't really, I don't know what the schedule entails, but it could work either way. The Jets may have to play one night in Winnipeg, travel to the divisional rival the next, or vice versa. So I feel that that is one of the kickers that helped Winnipeg last year may end up being one of those things that really hurt them this year, and it could cost them a playoff spot simply because of the amount of travel that they're going to have to do in such a condensed short time period.
Gus Katsaros, pro scouting coordinator for McKean's Hockey, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Pleasure's all mine. Enjoy the Jets, boys. Have a good one.
Have a good day. Take care, guys. Thanks very much. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It'll also be available on the TSN 1290 website. You can download it there just as soon as it is available sometime in the next, hopefully, 24 hours, depending on how quick we can get Remus up and at it. Continuing on with forwards, guys, before we move into defensemen, coming up in the next few segments after this one, you know, we've sort of talked about the top line scorers. You know, it's the middle of the pack guys. You know, those are the guys you can often you can win your draft strictly based on the middle of the pack forwards. Who jumps out to you there as being a guy that you can get some good value at that really you can pinpoint at the end of the year as being the guy that led you to success financially?
Well,
I thought the pools were all for free.
Yes, they're for fun. Don't we play for donuts?
Well, middle of the funny thing with hockey pools, we've been doing hockey pools since we were in high school, and you know it's so funny when you're in hockey pools. You know, everyone focuses on the first round, and the first round is important because if you get a good first round pick, it helps you a lot, and you know that you're going to match up well against anybody else because you have one of the top guys in the league. But Drew, the pools are all won in the middle rounds. It's if you think about it actually in this way, a hockey pool really is first round and then middle rounds because you've got, and let me clarify that, you obviously the second and third rounds you're going to take, you know, the guys a little higher, you're going to take the Getzlaff and the Perrys late first round, high second round. But after that, it slowly just goes. If you look at each year, points go down, you know, one or two between players, except at the top. So really, you're just gradually going down. But when I look at the middle rounds, and you look at a team like the Edmonton Oilers, this year the Edmonton Oilers aren't going to have too many guys that are at 80, 90 points. I actually agree with Gus, and I think Eberle probably is going to be mid-80s. He's that good, and I think he actually is the best player on the Oilers. But when you're looking at Taylor Hall, you're looking at Nail Yakupov, and those guys, those are the middle-of-the-pack guys, and those are going to be good picks. So you can't just necessarily look at it you're going to have to take an average player. Those are really middle-of-the-pack guys. But if you're looking, as we said, guys that are going to have better seasons, look at Rick Nash in New York. Obviously, he's probably going to be more of a second-rounder. But you look at Tyler Ennis in Buffalo. I think he's going to be better. He's obviously going to be on the top line now. But you also, Richie, have to look at guys that year after year are more so those middle guys. Sticking with Buffalo, a guy like Jason Pominville, Thomas Vanek, those guys are, you know, guys that you'll probably take more in the third and fourth rounds.
Look at a guy like Mike Ribeiro. We mentioned him before. He had 63 points in 74 games last year in Dallas. He's going to be going to Washington. not beats an offensive system. Nick Backstrom's health somewhat in question, and probably a lot of power play time. Maybe he slots in with Ovechkin and gets chemistry. Maybe he provides great value. That's more of a middle round guy. What about a guy like Michael Ryder, who consistently puts up 30 goals and plays a lot? Plays, you know, is reliable in terms of how many games he plays. And then you look at a team like Detroit, and you look at middle rounds. Well, are Datsyuk and Zetterberg going to play together the whole season? Mike Babcock starting the season with them. Obviously, you know, Holmstrom's retired. There's been Lidstrom's retired. The team's changing. He's loading up. You know, Zetterberg and Datsyuk last year had 69 and 67 points respectively. But for the most part, these guys have played a little bit together, but a lot apart because he's trying to spread the wealth, Mike being Mike Babcock in Detroit. You put talent with talent, you get better results. So that's something to take into account too, Ezzy. The mid-rounds, as you mentioned, and I totally agree, are where your bread's buttered in terms of if you're going to be winning the pools. Because right. I'll tell you why. Because the idiot in your draft, no offense, but the idiot in your draft can pick out a magazine and pick out the top 10. And he can say, okay, seventh-ranked guy is here. And generally speaking, when you look at the middle rounds, you're going to see guys, you know, the 65 to 70 point projections. The question you have to be able to analyze, because the top 10 guys usually in their prime and they're great.
Yep.
The question is that guy on the way down or on the way up? And also, I think sometimes the novice hockey, I realize there's not really sleepers because of the information, but the novice hockey fan or the novice hockey pool participant sometimes benefits by not overanalyzing. So he'll take a guy like Joe Thornton because he knows, you know, he knows the name, and Thornton provides a solid 65 to 70 points. Whereas the hot shot, like Drew.
Very hot shot.
We'll try and pick a guy who thinks will be a breakout guy, and maybe that breakout guy doesn't break out, and the solid participant will win. So it's a nice balance of those two things.
There's no reason in the first round to take a leap of faith on a guy. Because the advantage for doing so probably isn't that tremendously great. But to take a leap of faith, or you pick out the guy, you know, if you're in the fifth round of your draft, and you can pick out a guy where everybody around him that's drafted is averaging 50 points, but you get the guy who ends up getting 75 points that year, that is a huge advantage that's going to lead you to success.
The NHL.com website has Mikko Koivu ranked 84th. I know we've talked about him on the fantasy shows in the past. Mikko Koivu last year had 44 points in 55 games. Amazingly, was a plus 10 on a team of, it looks like, all minuses, except for his line mates, really. Mikko Koivu may be lining up beside Zach Parise. Mikko Koivu is a tremendous passer, great vision, great defensively. He's a guy who I think could really be taking finally take that next step offensively. I think he's somewhat taken it before, but now with Parise, he'll get more notoriety. That's a guy I think's underrated. A guy like Logan Couture. You still see the Thornton, you still see Marlowe. Logan Couture's the best forward on that team, in my opinion.
Still buried a little bit.
And he can score. And he can play center and wing, but he can score. Logan Couture could crack 35-40 this year. It's possible. So, I mean, you look at...
35-40 in a 48-game season?
Sorry. I know. It's all proportionate.
We're talking as if it's an 82-game season, but you can take our numbers and sort of have them to be perfectly accurate.
I believe he had, I think, 32 last year. I'm just checking. But a guy like that, you know, these are the mid-round guys or earlier round guys who you can really get some value on. I think last year, Couture had 31 last year, 32 the year before, plays a lot. 79 games 2 years ago, 80 games last year. But last year he upped his assist by 10. And a guy who's going to keep getting more responsibility because Joe Thornton is getting older. So, I mean, a guy like that's something to take into account. And then you got to look at teams like Phoenix and Nashville, teams that kind of score by committee, but somebody's got to play first power play. Somebody's got to play and be their offensive catalyst.
Drew mentioned the leap of faith, and you obviously should not be in your first round of your hockey pool taking a leap of faith. But the way I look at it, and
why I don't like Ovechkin in this year, but go on.
I think I'd like to think that I've had some success in hockey pools in the past. I've obviously made terrible picks, too, when I'm not really taking it too seriously, but in a hockey pool, you don't want to take any leaps of faith. And that's the thing with, you know, this notion of middle of the...
Are you referring to the... who was that defenseman that you took in the 2006 Olympic pool?
Russian. I don't even remember.
Okay, sorry.
You know, when you're looking at your hockey pools, I mean, look at the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, you mentioned, Richie, the Nashville Predators.
Better tune.
And the might have been. I think it was actually Phoenix Coyotes. But look at the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, look at who led the team last year. It was Blake Wheeler. Look at who's coming in now. Olli Jokinen, Evander Kane. All of these guys are going to be in between 50 and 65 points. I mean, some people might say Evander Kane this year, oh, yeah, he's going to break out and score 35 goals and get 80 points. It might happen. I think that's a little high from last year when he had 57 points. But the key in a hockey pool, and this is what the show is all about, we're trying to help people that are preparing for their hockey pools, and you have to pick guys that you have to limit the risk. And the guy that wins the hockey pool is the guy that takes Ray Whitney every year. Look at Ray Whitney's stats. He's 39 years old. No, actually, he might be 40 now.
Yeah.
Ray Whitney, look at his stats. Consistent year after year after year. Shane Doan, guys like that. I look at a guy like Evander Kane on the Jets, and you know he is going to be in between 60, 70 points. It's a good pick if you're in the third or fourth round. But you're going to start to lose in hockey pools when you say, oh, you know, this guy wasn't very good last year. I think he's going to break out. You shouldn't go in with the mindset to steal players. You should almost go into the mindset, and I think this is what's changed over the years with hockey pools and all the information that's out there. You want to take guys that you know, okay, they might not get 70 points, but they're a lock to get 50 points. I think that's a better mindset, because then you'll win. I mean, it's a sexier pick would be to take Jonathan Huberdeau, for example, and he will make the Florida Panthers. But I could see Jonathan Huberdeau getting 30, 35 points as opposed to somebody who's going to take him and they're going to say, okay, you know what? Jonathan Huberdeau, he was great in the World Juniors. He's going to get 70 points. I wouldn't expect a guy to get 70 points. Well, and again, obviously, this is a shortened season. Yeah. So
prorated. A prorated 70 points.
35 or 40 points is going to be a very good season prorated.
Contracts are an issue. Drew's always mentioned the contract year. That's a shtick we have, the jokes we have with Drew and Pools, because he always talks about the contract year player.
I believe that started with Alex McGillney, if I'm not mistaken.
And Richie, I think you're about to get into Getzlaff and Perry.
Getzlaff and Perry. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to have huge years? And they're playing together, and they can be dominant. Last year, they weren't dominant. Last year, you didn't see the same Ryan Getzlaff.
I had Getzlaff last year. He was very disappointing.
Yeah, you know, he still put up, in a disappointing season, he put up 57 points, which is really bad for a guy who has the immense skill that a guy
like
Getzlaff
has. He was in the 90-point range.
Now, his goals will go up a bit more.
Yep.
Great passer. But I think that was an off year. You wonder what he'll be able to do next year. Those guys have a lot of motivation. There's some big money on the line. That's probably their big time that's going to be their big UFA contract that they're going to be up for. And so you have to take that into account. And then you look at teams with new coaches. What about Calgary? They're going from Brent Sutter. They're going from defensive coach.
Yep.
They're going to Bob Hartley, a guy who preaches offense. Yep. Does Iginla benefit from that? You know, he's getting older. What about Mike Camilleri? Can he stay healthy and succeed in that system? What about Roman Cervenka? What about Michael Backlund? Maybe people always have banked on Backlund many times over, and he's let them down. You know, people don't know a lot about Cervenka. You know, Tanguay would be more of a sure thing there, in my opinion, because why? Well, he's played for Bob Hartley.
Sure.
Yep. He knows what to expect. He's a great passer. They've brought in some more talent.
Consistent.
He should be able to benefit from
consistent.
That.
Consistent. Iginla, consistent, year after year. You're going to win your hockey pool by taking guys that you know are going to be in a certain point range, not guys that are going to jump up by 30 points. Trust me, I know this.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jeff Angus, and we're going to start talking about fantasy defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with your latest NHL, CBA, Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the managing editor of Dauber Hockey, Jeff Angus. Jeff, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Jeff, you know, defensemen are always sort of that tricky sort of area when it comes to fantasy hockey. You never know when to draft one. You know, should you even draft one if you don't have to? So let's start with this question first, a two-part question. Who is the first defenseman to go off to get drafted, in your opinion? And who else is in the discussion besides that individual defenseman?
I think the obvious answer is going to be Erik Karlsson, just what he did last year and how dominant he was offensively. And I think even looking at Ottawa going forward, I mean, they're only going to get better with Silverberg and Zibanejad coming in. So I think he's a guy to obviously annoyed as the top fantasy defenseman. After him, I think there's a few contenders. I'm interested to see how Shea Weber does with Osuda. I think his numbers will take a bit of a hit. And the guy that I'd probably go with second is Alex Pietrangelo out of St. Louis. Again, like Carlson and Otto, I think as the team around him gets better, I think his numbers are only going to go up, and he's kind of got everything you want out of a number one defenseman. I mean, he's big, he's a really good skater, good defensively, and he's great offensively too. So I think Carlson 1, Pietrangelo 2, Weber's in the mix for 3-4 as well.
Jeff, when you're talking about, you know, that tier, that top tier you're just talking about there, what about that second tier, and maybe who kind of is in that tier for you, and where does a guy like the Jets defenseman Dustin Byfuglien fall? Is he a first-tier guy for you, or is he a second-tier guy?
Byfuglien would probably be a first-tier guy. I'd consider Enstrom a second-tier guy. Defensemen are kind of tough to predict compared to forwards because their production tends to fluctuate a lot more. Obviously, defensemen who put up points tend to play the power play a lot, and power play ice time isn't always a guarantee. For players like Carlson and Byfuglien, it is because their value is on the power play. But for second-tier defensemen, it's kind of hard. You even look at a guy like Kevin Bieks in Vancouver. I mean, he's gone from 40-plus points down to, like, the 20 range, back up to 40 again. And a lot of it just has to do with what role they're in. But, yeah, I consider Byfuglien a tier-one defenseman for sure. He'd be in the top five fantasy defenseman for this year.
Jeff, we're sticking with defensemen, obviously, and you mentioned roles, and that leads perfectly into my next question here. What defenseman do you think we'll see in an increased role and obviously corresponding in offensive production, increased offensive production? Who's a guy that you think is going to have an increased role, and maybe for people or in hockey pools out there, who should they draft that's going to be in that type of role?
I'll give you two names. One most people have heard of. I'll start with him. That's Mike Green. I think he's going to have a really big season. He's gone through some injury problems the last few years. And you look at the coaching changes and the way Washington's tried to change their playing style. I think it's really hurt his game. And I think bringing in someone like Adam Oates, who's an offensive mastermind, I think he's going to really let Green kind of play his game and accept him for what player he is. He's not perfect defensively. He takes a lot of big hits, but I think he's going to bounce back in a big way. And then in terms of, I guess, someone people haven't heard a lot about is a Detroit rookie named Brendan Smith. He's obviously stepping into a great opportunity with Lidstrom having retired and Brad Stewart now in San Jose. He played at Wisconsin for a couple years. He's been in the HL for a few years. He's really good offensively. He's really physical, good skater. I think by the end of the year, he could be Detroit's number two, number three defenseman after Cronwell.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jeff Angus, the managing editor of Dauber Hockey. We're talking fantasy defensemen. Jeff, people always like to hear overrated, underrated, sleepers, busts. In your mind, which defensemen are being overrated as we enter into this abbreviated 2013 NHL season?
There's a few. I mean, the point I made earlier about how defensive production tends to fluctuate year to year, I'd say a lot of the guys who don't have a track record of putting up points that have put up points last year, I'd be a bit wary about. And another guy he's a really good defenseman in real life, but I'm kind of curious to see how his role grows and changes is Drew Doughty in L.A. He had a couple really big years early in his career, and then he's really focused on his defensive game, and he's become very good defensively. But his numbers have taken a hit correspondingly. And I think coming out of the Cup win and the big season L.A. had, his value may be a little bit high. So I think he's a guy to look at. And yeah, in general, I would try and get a guy like, if I could, a guy like Carlson or Byfuglien, and then maybe wait a little while on defensemen, because I think you can find some sleepers late in the draft that'll be just as valuable as the guys that you'd think about picking earlier.
That leads us perfectly into our next question, Jeff. You know, you talked about Brendan Smith probably being a deep sleeper. Any other deep sleepers out there that people can, you know, hold off on drafting until a little bit later and get a steal?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple names. Dmitry Kulikov in Florida is one. He's going to slide in alongside Brian Campbell on the back end. And why that's significant is that's the role Jason Garrison had last year, and he put up 16 goals and earned a lot of money because of it. And I think Kulikov's going to benefit. Brian Campbell's a really good defenseman, moves the puck. He's going to get Kulikov a lot of scoring opportunities. And I think another one is Roman Josi in Nashville. Swiss defenseman, good skater, and it sounds like he's the guy that they're going to put with Shea Weber.
Mm-hmm. Worth noting on Kulikov, of course, is he's a restricted free agent, still has to sign before. So, you know, you can sort of keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah,
we expect he will sign, but, you know, you have to wait for that. It is a possibility until he actually does go and do so.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what happens with a lot of those contracts, the RFAs right now. I mean, you hear Subban and Ben are the priorities, but there hasn't been a ton of movement on either side. I think once the CBA is ratified, and I think once one of the big guys signs, you'll see the other, like the Kulikovs, kind of fall into place. So I'm not really too concerned, but it is something to keep in mind, as you noted.
Jeff, what about rookie defensemen? Has anybody caught your attention? Obviously, Ryan Murray in Columbus isn't going to play at all this year, but does anybody, you know, jump out at you that worth taking in a hockey pool?
I don't know. It's really tough with rookie defensemen because, for the most part, when they come into the league, they're told to focus on playing well on their own end. Dougie Hamilton's NHL ready, and he's really good. I don't know what kind of offensive role he'll have in Boston if he does make it past the first kind of couple games. Mark Barberio in Tampa Bay is a guy who's played in the NHL, and I was looking forward to seeing him play this year, and then Tampa went out and brought in Matt Carl and Sammy Salo, so I'm not sure what kind of offensive ice time is available there for defensemen. But in general, I'd probably avoid rookie defensemen. I mean, you'll have the odd anomaly like Dion Phaneuf back in, I think it was 05, 06 after the lockout, put up 20 goals, but that's not going to happen very often.
Jeff, we'll let you go on this last question. There are some pools that require you to draft a certain number of defensemen. You know, usually these are pretty deep pools. Richie happens to be in one of them where you have to draft, I think, four defensemen over the course of 25 mm-hmm. rounds or something like that.
Six
defensemen over 28 rounds. You know, how do you balance between drafting, say, you know, a 40-point defenseman in that kind of pool versus a 70-point forward? Because we know there's more, you know, more of those forwards who will be in the 50, 60, 70-point range than there are defensemen in the 40-point range.
Yeah, the key to that is it takes a little bit of work, but it's figuring out how many players are going to get drafted in your pool. So say you're drafting 28 players and there's 10 or 12 teams. So get that total number. And then look at how many forwards and how many defensemen last season, or go a couple years if you want to get a little bit more data out of it, and try and figure out like a midpoint. So say the average forward in your league gets 55 points, and say the average defenseman gets 33 points, and then use that midline as an example. So say someone like Carlson puts up 70 points, and every other defenseman, the average defenseman's in the low 30s, he's like a plus 40 player, whereas your average forward's putting up 55, 60. To get a plus 40 guy, you need someone in the 100 range. So that's just an example of how valuable someone like Carlson was last year.
Jeff Angus, the managing editor of Dauber Hockey, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our pleasure.
Right,
take care, Jeff.
Take care, guys.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final hour here on TSN 1290. Worth noting, next week's show.
Very early.
Obviously, the Jets play at 1:30 next Saturday. We are on air bright and early, 6 a.m.
You're leaking that right now.
For an extended four-hour edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
What's it going to be?
It's our season preview show, the comprehensive season preview that you've come to expect from Illegal Curve Hockey.
Bring your coffee, Drew.
6 a.m. until 10 a.m. next Saturday. Here on TSN 1290. I'm going down. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Jeff Angus, the managing editor of Dauber Hockey, for having joined us to talk about fantasy defensemen. In case you missed Jeff, or before him, Gus Katsaros talking forwards, you can download the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, search for it, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It's also available on the TSN 1290 website. Still to come, 30 minutes from now, Justin Goldman, the director of goalie scouting for McKean's Hockey and the founder of www.thegoalieguild.com. Probably the best resource on the internet strictly for goaltenders. It's really a tremendous amount of work that Justin puts into that site.
Yeah, it's a great site. We're going to ask him about Andre Pavlik.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course. Maybe even Al Montoya. Probably we don't have time for Al Montoya, too.
But if Al Montoya becomes relevant to the course of this season, I think that's a bad sign for the Winnipeg Jets.
He'll play some games. He's good. He'll be a good backup.
But that's all he should be, is the backup.
Fair enough, yeah. But it's good to know that if Andre Pavlik struggles, he can come in. That's important. But the point is, we're going to ask him about it, and it's going to be a good interview.
Okay.
Like the last two that we've had.
There you go. That I'm okay with. Let's continue on talking about defensemen. Erik Karlsson obviously had just a tremendous year last year for the Ottawa Senators. Probably one of the more entertaining players we got to watch, you know, throughout the course of the season.
Yep.
The various times the Senators visited here in Winnipeg. Last year, 81 games played, 19 goals, 59 assists, 78 points. His next nearest comparison, I guess, Brian Campbell and Dustin Byfuglien, both of whom had 53 points.
Byfuglien only
66 games, of course. Is there any way that Erik Karlsson can repeat that almost point-a-game total in your books?
I'm telling you right now that's not going to happen again. I think Erik Karlsson is a very good defenseman. I don't see that happening again. And we know that Mark Methot is probably going to play with Erik Karlsson. He was acquired. He was with formerly of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I should clarify that. Jeff Angus mentioned Dion Phaneuf, and a perfect example of a guy who's fluctuated throughout his career. Defensemen fluctuate. And Erik Karlsson isn't going to go down to 20 points, but for him to duplicate a 78-point season is almost unheard of. I mean, the guy is really good, but I'd expect him to be more around the 50 to 60-point range. And this is a hockey pool show, and we're trying to help people. We're not giving people bad advice. At least we shouldn't be. And defensemen...
Not deliberately, unless you're in our pool, in which case we're sabotaging you.
Drew, look at it this way. Most pools, you're going to get a group of friends together, and you're going to have probably 10 to 12 teams, and you're going to pick probably in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 players.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping that in mind, really only 6 to 10 defensemen should be taken. You're looking at, the elite. You're looking at the Shea Webbers. You're looking at the Drew Doughtys, the Dustin Byfuglien. I would even put, Tobias Enstrom maybe even in the top 10 there. But really, you shouldn't be reaching there. And you've got, Brian Campbell, as Jeff Angus mentioned, he's going to be playing with Dmitry Kulikov. Brian Campbell is an assist machine. He's like the Steve Nash of assists, really. But you should really only be taking the top-tier defensemen. And those guys will be top-tier. But Don't take Erik Karlsson in the first round is what I'm saying.
Well, no, you don't want to do that. But if you're in a defenseman pool with a defensive requirement,
yep.
Will Erik Karlsson have 78 points in 81 games? That's going to be hard. He's going to be hard pressed to replicate a season like that. But I will say that skill wise, he's all there. He can skate. He can quarterback the power play. He can do anything. Talent wise, I mean, I think he's going to get over 65 points. Maybe he won't get 78, but I think he's a 65 plus point defenseman. And I'm drafting him number one overall in your pool, even with
number one defenseman overall.
I'm going to throw out a guy that we haven't talked about at all so far, as a guy who I think should be taken as a top 10 defenseman who last year wasn't in the top 10 because he was injured. Chris Letang. Nobody's talked about him.
Agreed.
I would say Chris Letang will be a top five in points this year. And
defensive points.
Yeah. So Chris Letang is a guy that if you have to take a defenseman or if you're thinking of a guy to take later on. Don't reach too much on a defenseman. With Chris Letang, he was, I think, around the 40-point range in 50 games last year. So, in a 48-game season, he might get 40 points. So that's a guy who I would look at to draft as a defenseman.
I think you confidently take Dustin Byfuglien in the top three in defensemen.
That's who I was going to ask about next is Byfuglien. Last year, obviously, he put up good numbers for a defenseman. 66 games played and 53 points. Mm-hmm. Obviously, over a 48-game season, how do you see Byfuglien performing?
Really well. I mean, he's a guy who can get you 35 points, I think. I think he can be that good. 35 is a lot. 30, 35 points, I think he can do that. He's capable. He plays a lot of power play. Nova Gojan is going to mean even more responsibility for him and more time. He's a horse. People don't like certain parts about his game. I like Byfuglien. I think he's a creative mind. He's probably the best hockey sense, I'd say, on the Jets squad. The way he sees
the entire
game.
Team?
Yeah, the way he sees the game, yeah.
Okay, not fantasy related. Expand on that. Go a step further and explain why you think he has the best hockey sense.
Well, you watch, his defensive lapses are more, I think, in terms of laziness and willingness than anything else. Because if he put his mind to it, I think he could be a really good defenseman as well, defensively. But I think offensively, he sees the game as well as anyone, better than anyone on the team, I think. I think he sees things other players don't see.
So his vision, does he have elite vision?
Yeah, his elite vision. In my opinion, yeah, absolutely.
Guy you haven't mentioned, Zdeno Chara. We're sort of overlooking him because he does it year in, year out?
Old reliable, and especially in a pool, it's going to give you points for everything, plus, minus, penalty minutes, all that stuff. Even in a pool that doesn't, he's going to be a solid.
Zdeno Chara should be taken in every hockey pool. He had 52 points last year.
And the other issue there in Boston is that there isn't, depending on, Jeff mentioned Dougie Hamilton, but still, Boston's always been a thing of, Boychuk, who I like as a defenseman, and different guys that they have on that back end haven't really been complimenting Chara offensively, which means he has more of a role and he gets more points. So I do think Chara is one of those, you know, guys you can rely on absolutely. Look at a guy like Dan Boyle. Maybe he's taking a step back. Maybe Brent Burns takes a step up. Brent Burns was a big bust last year. And NHL.com, they have Boyle ranked 7 and Burns ranked 25. I don't think there's that big of a discrepancy between the two.
You have to consider, Richie, you know, just quickly, Brad Stewart's in San Jose now. Brent Burns was expected to take on more of a defensive role last year. Now you've got Brad Stewart, who's a physical, punishing defensive defenseman. So I'd agree with you on that one. I think Brent Burns' numbers will, even though it's a 48-game season, he's going to put up some nice numbers. And Dan Boyle, too, probably, you know, his offensive totals aren't, he's not going to put up career numbers. But another guy, you have to consider that these defensemen, you mentioned Chara, Drew, and Chara plays half the game. He's on the ice sometimes for more than half the game.
Also
sometimes he's on the ice for 60% of the game. And that's why you want to take him. He's going to be out there for the power play. He's going to be out there even strength, penalty kill, everything. And you want to factor that in. You don't want to take guys that, even though they're young and they're offensively talented, you don't want to be taking guys that are only going to be playing 15 minutes a game, because defensemen, their minutes fluctuate way more than forwards.
And you know what, Drew? You talk about some other guys who maybe aren't getting a ton of attention. You know, Ryan Whitney obviously has those problems with his, I think his foot problems or ankle problems, but he's a guy who on a team with loaded with offensive talent and a guy who's better offensively than he is defensively, and he can have a shot and he can move the puck. He's a guy who you might want to get on some nice value, especially on a team that's going to have a nice offensive output. Yes.
Is it chomping or champion?
Champing.
Champion.
Which,
okay.
By the way,
I always say chomping.
And I'll give you credit on this one, Richard. For years, I thought it was chomping. Mm-hmm. And then.
I thought you just said it was chomping.
No, it's champion.
Champion. Champion.
For years, I thought it was chomping. Mm-hmm. And now, every time I hear somebody say chomping, I immediately say in my head, or sometimes out loud, it's champing. And people look at me like I'm crazy, like, really?
It's champion. Champing? But it's spelled with an A.
It is champing at the bit.
Okay, so
but it has been perversed so many times by people into chomping that sort of has now become acceptable. But it's wrong. Go on.
So I'm champing because Richie mentioned Ryan Whitney, and a guy we have to talk about that we haven't talked about yet is Justin Schultz.
Yes,
who's obviously also on the Oilers.
Justin Schultz was on pace.
For along with Eberle in the AHL for over 100 points. I mean, he's racking it up. And he's an interesting guy to me. You're talking about defensemen, and some pools require you to take a defenseman.
Is he the first rookie off the board? Defenseman or forward?
Again, Justin Schultz, I think you have to temper your expectations.
I don't know.
If you listen to Jordan Eberle talk about him, because he was playing with him, he's saying this guy does everything well. He can move the puck out of his own zone on the power play. He's a great distributor of the puck. Justin Schultz, and again, in a 48-game season, even though he's been playing for Oklahoma City in the AHL, I think you take him, but I don't think you project him in a 48-game season to get 50 points.
No,
I don't see it happening.
That's excessive, but you can ask the question if he's the first rookie off the board.
Well, you're in a pool.
Over Yakupov or Huberdeau or Granlund, I think some people will. I wouldn't. I also disagree a little bit.
You might get more power play time than those guys.
I disagree a little bit with
Gus
on Granlund. I think I'm not. I think there will be a bit of a learning curve, even though he was really good in Finland. I think
he's playing the AHL this year, though, too, to note.
Exactly.
Which helps.
If I'm taking rookies, I almost want to avoid all of them and probably only Yakupov, maybe Huberdeau. But I think Granlund, even though, you know, everybody remembers him from that crazy goal in the World Junior Tournament, the guy's got more skill than you can know what to do with.
Wouldn't be surprised if Schultz led rookies in points.
Put it on the board.
Because he doesn't, because they don't have a good.
I'll take Yak.
They don't have a good defense, right? So he gets ice time. He plays a lot.
They're relying on him to come in and sort of be, you know, maybe not the number one there, but 1B.
He's top pairing defenseman for sure.
Also, I mean,
Smeed will be there. Smeed is more of their shutdown guy. They have Whitney, obviously an offensive guy. Schultz is talented, but the thing is, guys, you know, you look at Yakupov. Sure, he's great, but then there's Nugent Hopkins and there's Eberle, and you're still going to give Smith some offensive time, and you're still going to get obviously Hull. And Gagne.
They might ease Yakupov into the lineup.
Well, there you go.
More.
What about Schultz? Maybe he just rolls into top power play unit. Who's going to play over him? Because remember, Whitney and Schultz, Whitney's a left-handed shooting guy. Schultz is a right-handed shooting guy. They can complement each other. You can switch them on that. You can put them on their off wings in the power play. They can complement each other.
Let me ask you about this guy. And Jeff Angus mentioned this. And it's not a guy that, you know, especially here where we only saw them once last year. We may not, you know, sort of fly under the radar. Alex Pietrangelo of the St. Louis Blues.
He's great.
You know, very good offensive defenseman. I mean, he was fifth in defensive scoring last year. 51 points in 81 games. Talk about his game and how you see him developing and taking that next step.
I mean, he's already taken that next step. He's on the process of doing it. He's a great skater. He's a really good all-around defenseman. He can be trusted by a guy like Ken Hitchcock, can play in all situations. Nothing not to like. I mean, he's a top 10 guy for sure.
Yeah, he had 50 points last year, so obviously, you know, you're looking at it 30 to 35 points in a 48-game schedule, but he had 12 goals last year, and I don't, off the top of my head, maybe we'll get Ream to check it, but I'm pretty sure Pietrangelo, I don't have this in front of me because unlike you guys, I don't have internet with me here.
Yeah.
But I don't think he had a lot of power play goals. And Pietrangelo is a guy that you'd have to think that if he gets some, a little more production.
It's on six power play goals of 12, so
six,
half.
Six power play goals. Half. That's not a lot. You'd expect him to get more than that. So if he can get more goals on the power play, then you're looking, Pietrangelo could be top five in scoring. Mm-hmm. Very good defenseman. You're not going to go wrong taking Pietrangelo.
You're not.
Let's go to break. When we come back, another segment on defensemen. Then we're going to wrap with two segments on goaltenders. You're listening to the Fantasy Hockey Preview Show on TSN 1290 with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're talking fantasy defensemen for another segment. And then we'll get into goaltenders and we'll talk to Justin Goldman about Andre Pavlik, who's probably of utmost concern to Winnipeg Jets fans. Reminder, next Saturday, obviously, Jets begin the season at home. They play at 1:30 in the afternoon, by all accounts. We are on the air 6 a.m., bright and early, 6 a.m. next Saturday for a four-hour edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, including our comprehensive team-by-team, division-by-division NHL season preview.
Maybe 2 p.m. next week.
You're thinking
that tentative schedule that was released at 2, and it appears that on that same schedule, the Saturday home games were all at 2. Just a note. Wow. So right. Be on at 4:30.
So anyways, we do not know for sure what time, but we know that it's going to be next Saturday, and by all accounts, it's probably going to be bright and early, so you can wake up to Illegal Curve Hockey, because really the dulcet tones of Ezzy is what you want waking up to while you're lying in bed, I think.
Well, very dulcet. He'll be waking up to our voices, because he'll be in bed.
He'll be in bed also, yeah.
We did this once. We did the Ezzy Charity Challenge.
That was a 7 a.m. start.
Still, I won.
Yeah, you won.
I was here.
And you were.
I was here.
You were. Okay.
Well, if you want to do it again.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good. Don't worry about that.
We got to make sure we're all here that early, Drew. Sometimes you're caught sleeping in.
I take offense to that.
Drew actually sleeps with his eyes open just because he knows that at any hour of the day I could be doing something to damage the Illegal Curve brand. Yeah. So Drew actually is like up at night, and he's like, okay, what is Ezzy going to do tonight? What is Ezzy going to do? I'm gonna have to clear up his mess. So Drew just sleeps with his eyes open.
That's pretty funny. I'd say you're not terribly wrong. I don't have curling next Friday, so I should be able to get. I'll go to bed at a nice reasonable hour, about 8:30 or so. That should be a fine bedtime for me.
That's a big win last night.
Yeah, it was a big win last night for curling.
Win, loser, Drew.
Well, we won. Good game, competitive. Other defensemen, you know.
God.
Other defensemen. Guy that I always liked the game of, Mark Streit, the New York Islanders. You know, 47 points last year, 82 games. You know, when we get down to that list, are you sort of just into the real sort of just the bulk of the defensemen, you know, fairly interchangeable?
Mark Streit, you could argue, is going to be a, you know, top 20 guy, top 15 guy even. And he could have, you know, good, you know, Vyshnovsky, though, is a question there, right, guys? You know, does Vyshnovsky play? If he plays,
Sorry.
He's already unhappy with the Islanders.
Flight.
Yeah, he missed his flight. That's what I was going to say.
So the question is, does he help push and propel straight back to the levels he had before, or does he take away the points, or does he not show up at all? And Streit has a similar year to last year. I don't know, but Streit's certainly a good puck moving defenseman who will play on the power play with the likes of John Tavares. Solid guy. I think you can kind of know what to expect if there's no Vyshnovsky. If not, then you have a little bit more I guess research to do and make a decision. I personally would think that if Vyshnovsky does come, then Streit's point total would go down. That's my personal opinion.
I agree with Richie. And again, this goes back to what we were talking about in the second hour about for hockey pool. You know, people that are if I can speak properly, people that are participating in hockey pools, you want to go with the sure thing. And for example, Jeff Angus mentioned Kevin Bieksa had 44 points last year, lots of assists. He's distributing the puck to the Sedins. When Kessler's healthy, a lot of guys. But if you're between Streit and Bieksa,
what about Edler's health? Exactly, Edler's health.
Right.
Garrison.
Right. And a guy,
where's the time going?
Another guy, Jason Garrison, had by far his best year playing with Brian Campbell in Florida, and they gave him the big contract. And
The Canucks gave him the big contract.
Right, and the Canucks did. And even though, you know, it's good for Jason Garrison, this is he's only going to get this one big contract because he's got this contract at a later age. It took him a while to get to the NHL. But again, Jason Garrison, you're getting a huge contract for one good season playing with Brian Campbell. I wouldn't expect Jason Garrison to be top 10 in the league in scoring. And based on last year, he was top 10 in the league in goals for defensemen. Mm-hmm. He might have even been, you know, top 3 or 4. I'll have to check that. But, you know, you want to take a sure thing. And it's funny, in fantasy pools, there'll be people that take it seriously and overanalyze, and then there'll be someone who just kind of picks out of a magazine, and it's fun. Hockey pools are supposed to be fun. You're not going to break the bank, usually. You shouldn't be. And we remind everyone to, obviously, gamble responsibly.
As these PSAs.
Yeah, you want to take a guy that is an established defenseman, who's an offensive defenseman, as opposed to a guy who you think is going to duplicate a career year. It's very rare that a guy will duplicate a career year, especially when that career year his point totals are way higher than they were the previous year. I mean, there's countless examples, right?
Well, let me ask you guys about the, you know, Weber and Suter. Obviously, their names just go together.
Split up.
Yeah, they're split up now. Which of the two is going to be the better draft pick if you're drafting a defenseman?
That's a really good question, Drew. I think Suter's offensive ability has kind of been underrated until obviously the past year, 2 years, when obviously the contract situation came to be. Suter has a lot more offensive firepower to work with there.
Offensive firepower and the Minnesota Wild just roll off the tongue.
Well, now they do. And Koivu, and I mean, Healy's a little bit more, isn't what the player he once was, but it's still a shooter.
Yeah.
Yep. And you have other guys there who can, you know, Setoguchi and such, who can perform. I don't love his hands, Setoguchi, but offensive talent, when you look at Nashville, you have different guys. You know, you have a guy, Girard, who's got good hands, and you're hoping Colin Wilson can take the next step, whether it be at center or at wing. They've kind of speculated that that could be either or this year. But guys like Legwan, Fisher, limited. So Weber may not have the talent and maybe a little bit more of the focal point because they're going to be putting more attention on him. If I had to say who gets more points this year, it's a heck of a question.
It's almost a coin flip.
I think Weber's still the more offensively talented player.
Yep.
So, I think they probably finish within 2 to 3 points of each other, and Weber gets more goals and Suter gets more assists.
I think that's the key thing there. Weber had 19 goals last year. Weber is more of the type of guy that's, you know, going to blast the shot from the point. He's got, aside from Chara, he is the hardest shot in the NHL. It's ridiculous. We interviewed him, and he's a towering guy, Shea Weber.
Yeah, he's huge.
I think he's the best defenseman in the league. It's incredible the offensive skills that he has. And Richie, you know, I can't really add too much to what Richie said, but I think that's the key point, is that the guys that are around Ryan Suter, he's going to rack up the assists in a 48-game season. You know, he could get 50 points. He could be a point-a-game player with the guys that he's playing with. So both of those guys should be taken if you're going to take a defenseman. But keep in mind that Weber's going to have way more goals, obviously.
But, yeah, I think they're a couple points apart this year.
It'll be interesting to see. What about, take a team like Detroit,
yep,
where they have a big hole to fill in losing Nicklas Lidström.
You hope Cromwell takes another step forward. He's an offensively talented guy. He's going to be thrust into a complete and total, you know, quarterback responsibility on that first pairing, you'd think. Jeff mentioned a guy like Brendan Smith before, but you're going to have, and they lose Brad Stewart too, so Detroit's really redone that defense. Now you have Ian White. I still think Cronwell's the guy you want to take, because also Cronwell in a pool can get you penalty minutes, can get you plus minus, can get you everything. He's kind of an all-around guy.
But Richie, with Brad Stewart gone, Nicklas Lidström's retired, you mentioned Ian White, and they obviously went out and signed Carlo Koliakovo, who you were talking about weeks before, as a guy that they should sign. I mean, if you're in a deep pool, you shouldn't be taking those guys early on at all. I mean, aside from Cronwall. Yeah. I mean, Cronwall, he'll be in a 48-game season. He might be around 30, 35 points, maybe 40. But Koliakovo and White, you should only be taking those guys late.
25 would be kind of what I think would be around where you would hope as a first-line player playing with all those guys in the power play.
Yep. But I mean, the other guy's really late. Brendan Smith is a young defenseman, too. Again, yeah, his point totals will go up. He didn't play that much last year. But you don't want to start reaching, and you should only be taking those types of guys late in your pool.
Let's look at Cronwell, because, yeah, Drew, you mentioned him. In the past few years, he's had 22 in 48 games, and then so that's kind of a, you know, 48 happens.
Yeah,
to be.
There you go.
37 last year, 36 year before. You know, an elevator role, I think, because of Noah Lidstrom. You're looking at, yeah, you know, 25 points puts them at about just around 50, 48. Yeah, yeah, I think 25 points might be a solid estimation, maybe a little more with the responsibility, approximate amount. Yeah, I mean, you know, and look at the guy, you know, he's last year he was a minus two, but he's never been a minus player otherwise in his career. And he can get some penalty minutes, although he's usually consistently within the 35 to 55 penalty minute range. So a guy who can score too, 15 goals last year. So goals, assists, yep. some plus minus, and or not a negative at least, and some penalty minutes.
And he's the number one guy, and I think he'll do a good job. I think people are going to say, there's talented. A lot of pressure on him, but Cronel's been on the wings for many years now, and this isn't like he's being plopped into a situation. I mean, he's been on the team for a long time, and he's been learning under Niklas Lidström. I think he'll be fine.
He became a full-time guy in 2006 and 7 is really when he started playing full-time, 68 games. Do you guys want to know how old Niklas Cronwell is? People see him as a young guy really coming to his prime.
He's like 32 or 33.
32, yeah.
Before we go to break, we bring in Justin Goldman. We switch to goaltenders. Let me ask you guys this question.
Mm-hmm.
Ezzy, your draft, which you organized, does not require you to draft a defenseman.
Correct.
There's no
or
rules.
Goalies.
Or goalies. There's no rules regarding that.
Yep.
Do you anticipate, in the course of that draft, to draft a defenseman? Or do you go into them with the mindset of trying to avoid defensemen, you know, maybe with the exception of Erik Karlsson?
Well, Jeff Angus mentioned it, and you have to look at how many players are going to get taken. We were talking about this. We'll probably have 12 or 13 teams in my hockey pool, and we'll draft about 10 or 12 players. So you're looking, let's say, you know, 130 to 150 players will be taken. So if there are 130 to 150 players taken, and you look at how many defensemen were in the top 150 scorers, off the top of my head, there's probably 10 maybe. I'd have to look at that. But you should there might be less than that. In a draft where you're taking about 150 players, you should really only take 4 or 5 defensemen, I would say. So I would probably in a later round take a Chara or take a Karlsson or take a Buff, somebody like that. But unless you're in a pool with where you have to, you know, take 20 players and there's 10 teams, so you're gonna take 200 players, then take a couple defensemen. But it's all about how many players are going to be taken in the draft, I'd say.
You know, if you have guys you think are going to exceed 60 points and you've gone past what you think will be 60 points for the forwards, then yeah, I mean, sure. And I think the defense would end up being a little bit more, you know, the top guys who play big minutes and are always going to be around that same point range, you get a little more predictability as opposed to maybe taking a shot. I think it also depends on if you have a couple of drops in your pool, you know?
Yeah.
If you have a couple of drops in your pool, I wouldn't necessarily take the defenseman. If you have 10 guys and everyone counts, that defenseman may make sense for some security in the later, you know, two, three rounds.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Justin Goldman from the Goalie Guild is going to join us, and we shift our focus to fantasy goaltenders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 2:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets, NHL, CBA news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the director of goalie scouting for McKean's Hockey, and he's the founder of thegoalieguild.com, Justin Goldman. Justin, welcome back to the program. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me on again.
Our pleasure. Justin, we're obviously talking fantasy hockey. We've been talking about it for the last 90 minutes or so. Who is the number one pick for goaltenders if you have to draft a goaltender in your hockey pool?
I think experience is going to be so huge in a condensed season, and saying that, the Vezina Trophy winner, Henrik Lundqvist, is my number one pick. He was all of last season, and I think he'll continue to be the top dog for goaltenders this season.
Jess, when you're looking at selecting a goalie in these pools, many times shutout really gives people, you know, a bonus point value, whether in your points pool, you're in a rotisserie pool, whatever it may be. You might have your own category. It might be some extra points for shutout. Are there a couple guys who you think might perform and get more shutouts than maybe some of the other top netminders?
Yeah, I mean, again, you look at the top goaltenders last season. What was it? Lundqvist, I believe, had 8 or 9 shutouts. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Quick had 10, which is unbelievable for a 69-game season. And Brian Elliott had 9 shutouts, which was amazing for the games that he played. So I think, again, you look at team defense, and obviously St. Louis is going to have an edge there in terms of shutouts for their tandem. But, again, I go back to the point that, at least in my experience, maybe you guys would know this better than me, but saves are starting to become a fantasy category that more leagues seem to be adding. And so you have to kind of look at workload, again, especially in a condensed season, as a pretty significant trade or point when you're looking at drafting goaltenders. And so, again, I point to the workhorse starters, guys like Henrik Lundqvist, and we know now that Jonathan Quick's going to get the bulk of the starts in L.A. You know, Coach Daryl Sutter said that he's not going to be rotating Bernier in as much as he'd like to. And again, you look at guys like Cam Ward, Carey Price, the guys that are going to be playing 36, 38, maybe even 40 games for those teams that are bubble playoff teams. That's where I think you're going to get your most bang for your buck, whether you're talking shutouts or really any other category in goaltending.
Justin, we wanted to ask you about Anders Lindback. Obviously, he was acquired by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you know there's a lot of pressure on him this year. Tampa Bay wants to get back in the playoffs. Are you as bullish on Anders Lindback in Tampa Bay as most people are?
I would say I'm more cautiously optimistic than anything. I think the good news for him is that he played very, very well the last month of the lockout when he was in Finland. So I think that's huge. I mean, any goaltender that had a really good string of games in Europe or during the lockout comes in with confidence. They have a little bit more of an advantage over the guys that didn't play. The thing that's working against him, I believe, is the fact that this is obviously his first time in this type of a role. And again, you're going through so many significant changes. You're switching conferences. You're switching the style of play between Nashville and Tampa Bay. You're switching in terms of the type of pressure that you face, knowing that you have expectations to fulfill as a guy that's expected to lead Tampa Bay to the playoffs. So let's also not forget one other point I think that's really important that maybe the casual fan doesn't realize about Lindback. He battles with adult Still's disease, and that's something that when you're a backup and you're only playing once every couple of weeks, it's probably a little bit easier to manage when you have the rigors of a condensed schedule and all the pressure that comes with, you know, the new role that Lindback has, and you're talking about dealing with this disease that he has to manage on a daily basis. Maybe it's a little bit more of a tougher adjustment for him heading into Tampa Bay. So I would say I'm cautiously optimistic. I think when I did my original top 30 fantasy rankings for NHL.com way back in September, I had him like 25th out of 30th, which maybe is a little bit low considering he was, you know, he is kind of the guy that's titled as the starter. I think you need to give him maybe this half season to get acclimated to what he's going to be facing in Tampa Bay. But next season, 2013-2014, that's when he really steps up. He's more comfortable in that role, and then he really shines. So I would be pretty cautious heading forward with Lindback this season.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Justin Goldman, Director of Goalie Scouting for McKean's Hockey and the founder of thegoalieguild.com. Justin, the Edmonton Oilers have a ton of young offensive talent. It helps when you draft first overall consecutive years in a row. Makes it easy to get a lot of good scorers there. How much of the Oilers' chances this year rest on the goaltending of Devan Dubnyk?
I think it's huge for him. I mean, this is kind of the make-or-break season for Dubnyk. He has a bigger contract to live up to, and kind of like what I said with Lindback, everything changes when the expectations change, and there's no more excuses for Dubnyk, right? Like, he's a former first-round draft pick. He played very well at the end of last season. I have this stat written down for him. Post-All-Star break for Dubnyk, he was 13-9-2 with a .919 save percentage, and both shutouts he had last season came after the All-Star break. So I think he's in a situation now where the pressure is really on. He's going to feel it ramp up here, and he is definitely kind of seen as the backbone of the team this season. And again, the expectations are even more so because he did play very well in the Spengler Cup for Team Canada. So the fans have seen him play well lately. He has those own expectations for himself. But again, everything changes when you go from being that 1B goaltender or that backup guy to being counted upon to be the starter and be durable and consistent. I still see Devin Dubnyk as kind of a fragile guy. You know, you've seen some games where he gives up one bad goal or one leaky goal, and everything will kind of fall apart, and it takes him a few games to get that confidence back. So to me, that's not the type of starter mentality you want to see from a guy moving forward for this Oilers club. But, you know, you kind of hope for the best there and know that, you know, Edmonton is giving him this opportunity to finally run with things. They would love to see him play 36, 38 games, get 20 wins, and push that team into a playoff spot. Again, I don't even think I'd be cautiously optimistic. I'd almost kind of downgrade him a little bit because the pressure is really high in a Canadian market like Edmonton, and I think he needs another year as well to kind of build himself up into that more consistent, more durable number one guy that every, you know, fantasy manager is looking for.
Justin, we're in Winnipeg. Of course, Andre Pavlik gets a lot of attention here. What do you think of his game, and what do you expect to see from him this season?
I've been on the record as saying this many, many times last season. This guy is an elite talent. He's a fringe elite goaltender right now in the sense that you see what he's capable of doing. There's some nights where he stands on his head. He makes some of the most amazing highlight reel type saves out there. But the biggest thing we're looking for now is the consistency, right? Like, that seems to be the one X factor in his game that maybe is missing. You bring that consistency to the table in terms of how he mentally prepares and how he's able to play a 60-minute game or, you know, play three games in 4 or 5 nights and still play at a high level on that third game and that fifth night. That, to me, is what's missing. And I think he still has the potential to bring it this season. He didn't have a good experience overseas during the lockout. I know he's dealing with some off-ice stuff with the DUI or DWI or whatever it was. But at the end of the day, really all it takes for a guy like Pavlik is to get hot in those first 3 or 4 games. And so I think if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, you're crossing your fingers that he comes out of the gate with a couple of big games and he rides that emotion of confidence and that wave of confidence and just soars and hits a new level. Because when you talk about the technical side of his game and what he's capable of doing, like the way that he stops pucks, he is a magnificent guy to watch. He's one of my favorite goalies to watch because he's got great size. He's so athletic. He really, really gives a darn in the sense that, you know, he puts it all on the line. He wants to stop the puck so badly. But the only thing that's missing is that consistency. And if he can grab it this season in a condensed schedule, knowing that he's probably going to be counted upon to play again that high number of 38 to 40 games to push Winnipeg into the playoffs, I mean, he could be a very – I actually have him listed as one of my top 5 sleepers because the skill is there. He's only missing that X factor of consistency.
Justin, I think Jets fans are going to be very happy to hear that. Ryan Miller is a guy that we have to ask you about. It was a tale of two years last year for him. First half was a nightmare, and then he bounced back and had a good second half. What are you expecting out of Ryan Miller? Do you think this is the year where, well, even though it's only, like you said, a condensed year, you know, is he going to put it all together in 48 games, do you think?
I think so. I think this is going to be a great bounce-back season for him. Do I have him ranked as my, you know, one of my top 5 guys? No, he's more like a guy that's between 6 to maybe 10 at the lowest. But I think you have to look back at last season, and like you said, it was a tale of two halves because the first half was just an absolute train wreck. And I mean, no pun intended, but when he got steamrolled by Milan Lucic, I mean, it just was not only did it hurt him physically and he had to deal with concussions and everything else, but mentally I think it just completely derailed his entire game. You know, and he was never really able to put his game back together. And it really took until, I think, the All-Star break when he actually had a chance to just get away from it all, right? He was away from the rink. You know, he didn't have the daily practices for about a weekend there, and he just kind of took some time off to kind of reset the mental button and get back to doing what he does best, which is just being a very positionally sound, relaxed, calm, and smooth goaltender. So I think now that all the drama of the CBA and ownership and everything else that he's kind of been in the headlines for is out of the way, he's going to come to the rink prepared and focused and ready to go. And they have so much faith in him. They have to put so much of the team's success on his shoulders. He's definitely the type of guy that's going to play 40 games. And I think without the distractions, without the injury issues from last season, he could be one of those goalies that, again, probably like a top 6 or top 7 guy. But, you know, a couple of big wins and a couple of shutouts, you know, he could definitely be one of the best goalies to own this season.
Justin, in terms of goaltenders, Drew's going to quickly ask you about sleepers before we end this one, but who's overrated? Which goaltenders are maybe people are expecting a good season from, but they may be disappointed?
I think Brizgalov is, again, going to be an overrated goaltender. I mean, first of all, he wasn't very good in the KHL, except maybe the last two or three games. And he's still the type of guy, I think, in a market like Philadelphia, he's so easily distracted by what's going on in the media, and he almost seems to concern himself more about his image than just stopping pucks. And, you know, maybe that's – I'm being pretty candid there with what I'm saying about Brizgalov, but, you know, I look at my list of overrated guys, and he's number one on the list. I think Antti Niemi is maybe going to be a little bit overrated. I think historically, especially the last two seasons, he's a slow starter. And one of my best sleepers this season, a backup that I think can steal a job or maybe steal, you know, a bulk of the starts, would be Thomas Greiss. Tremendous athlete that has a lot of skill and some starter upside. So I would say I have Brizgalov, Niemi. Jimmy Howard is a real interesting one. I mean, you look at the goaltending for the Red Wings now, and Howard has such a huge adjustment to make because there's no more Nicholas Lidstrom. Up front, he's lost Thomas Holmstrom, no more Yuri Hudler, no more Brad Stewart on the blue line as well. That's a significant, very, very significant adjustment for Jimmy Howard, who still, yes, he's a very solid goaltender, and he plays a very good, positionally sound game, not considered one of those elite athletes like we're talking about with an Andre Pavlik or a Jonathan Quick or any of those other starters. So I have Jimmy Howard as a guy that might be overrated. And then the last one, which maybe not be will not be a surprise to many of you, but obviously I think Martin Brodeur is going to be overrated. I think just at his age and where his game is at and what we've seen from him in the regular season the last few years, I would stay away from him for sure. And then maybe try and acquire him in the last month of the season when he tries to turn it on for the playoff push. But those would be my four main overrated guys.
In 30 seconds or less, can you give us some of the underrated guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just list them off here. I think when you're talking about underrated guys, Sergei Bobrovsky, excellent in the KHL, has a very good opportunity to lead the Columbus Blue Jackets. Semyon Varlamov, absolutely sensational athlete. I think Colorado has a better team than many expect, so he's a guy I would have on my list as a sleeper. And then Yevgeny Nabokov, old Wiley veteran guy. We all know Rick DiPietro is injured and will stay injured, and so Nabokov is going to shoulder the load in New York and I think do a very good job as well.
Justin Goldman, founder of thegoalieguild.com. You can read his work on NHL.com as well, and he's the director of goalie scouting for McKean's Hockey. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, no problem. Keep up the good work, boys. I'll talk to you later.
Take care, Justin. Thanks very much.
Right. Thanks a lot, Justin.
Let's go to break.
Problem.
When
Thanks,
we come
guys.
Back, one final segment. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Justin Goldman from thegoalieguild.com for giving us some insights into the goaltenders. A few minutes before we have to wrap up this week's program, a reminder, 6 a.m. start time next Saturday morning for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 4 hours.
I'm just tired thinking of that.
An extended version, 4 hours, 6 a.m. till 10 a.m.
It's a long day.
You know what, though?
It's a long day, isn't it?
Hey, the NHL, that's when the NHL season starts. I will be up at 3 o'clock. I'm excited. You know what? I'm going to stop complaining.
Yeah, you'll be up because you haven't gone to bed
this
yet.
This is the best job in the world doing this with you guys. I'm being serious. I'm getting a little bit emotional here. But the NHL season is starting on Saturday. I'm going to get up. I'm excited. No complaining.
Oh, this is great.
Thanks.
Next is going to be a 6 till Wednesday game, probably over around 5.
Well, the game, if it's a 1:30 start, 2.5 hours, 3 hours by the time we do wrap up for everything, about 5 o'clock. So it's you're at about an 11-12 hour day before your Saturday night begins.
Richie, just do like Drew does. You know, Drew's 75 years old. He just goes to bed at 6 anyways on Friday night.
Of course.
So just go to bed at 6.
Yeah. Drew, how was the shuffleboard last night?
It was curling. That's clever though.
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you. It's very funny. Amusing. Goaltenders. Who do you take first overall? Do you agree with Justin that it's Henrik Lundqvist?
I think it is because of the crazy shot blocking with the Rangers, and you're going to have Rick Nash there scoring now, so you're going to get wins. You're going to have, I think, some weaker team in New Jersey, weaker team in with the Islanders. Obviously, Pittsburgh and Philly are hard offensive matchups, but the Rangers play such a tight defensive style. Lundqvist, the only skepticism I have with the Lundqvist first overall pick is the guy hasn't played a game since last year.
Yeah, he didn't go back to Sweden and play, that's right. So. I think Henrik Lundqvist, I think, is the best goalie in the NHL, and I would take him number one. There's a couple of guys. We didn't talk about Corey Schneider at all. I think Corey Schneider is another guy that, for me, would be top three. I don't know. He would be in there as a top three. And another guy, too, we didn't talk that much about is Marc-Andre Fleury. Because you got to keep in mind, in hockey pools, Drew, it's going to be about wins and shutouts.
The team,
it's not really save percentage, even though, you know, save percentage is a nice indicator of how good a goalie is. It's wins and shutouts.
Yeah, when it comes to goaltenders, for the most part, unless you're in, like, a rotisserie league of sorts. But
even save percentage in rotisserie leagues, like, overall, over the year, you know, you'll have a good save percentage. But at the same time, you know, if it's a week-to-week thing. I mean,
I don't know a lot of people that do
that. Yeah, I don't like those leagues that much.
Yeah, it's most straight pools are wins and shutouts.
So Henrik Lundqvist is the vote for both of you. Guy, Mike Smith. Do you see Mike Smith replicating what he did last year in Phoenix?
Yeah, that'd be hard. Really hard.
I still think he's a good goalie, and they got Mahalik, but they also lost Ray Whitney. I mean, I think Mike Smith is a really good goaltender. I think he had 41 wins last year.
38.
38. Okay, a little high. But I think he'll still be. I could still be 30 to 35. I don't know about that many. I don't think Phoenix is making the playoffs this year. Yeah. I mean, I'm previewing a little bit into our season preview. I think Phoenix takes a step back this year.
Jonathan Quinn, Quicks in injury troubles. I mean, what's happening there? That's a question. And hey, you know. Say it starts aggravating quick. What about Bernier? Comes right in there with a lot of talent. I mean, he played in the Spangler Cup. So, yeah, you know, if you're looking at guys we haven't talked about yet, we really haven't talked much about Carey Price.
Cam Ward.
I mean, there's a lot of good goalies out there, guys.
Yeah.
So I would say in terms of strategy, I wouldn't take Lundqvist too high because I think there's a goalie you can get in the 10, 11, 12 range. Kind of like quarterbacks in football. See how many starting quarterbacks there are who are really good, and you only need one or two.
Right.
Remember, okay?
For those asking, if you're thinking it, we haven't heard anything regarding CBA ratification yet. The Jets schedule is not officially out yet. So for those, they managed to really keep delaying it. I thought it would come out before we were on air.
Yep.
And we're about to be off air in 5 minutes, and there's still no sign of either the any of the information, the memorandum of understanding apparently still being worked on.
Isn't Batman speaking to Constantine about it before he releases it?
Constantine, yeah. I think better known to most people. People don't know who Constantine is.
Oh, sorry.
People know who at Jets XOXO is. So also, Constantine mentioned in that Grantland article. Did you guys read that this week?
Oh, I read it all right.
It was incredible. It blew my mind. But if you haven't read it, we'll tweet it out on our Twitter feed. We did earlier, but we'll do it again. Constantine being mentioned on Grantland.com. Let's wrap up the show.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Polk.
I'm cheering our boy Michael Remus. 26 years old today. Came for the big show. I thought last night when we threw him in a cap, he wouldn't be making it on time. Came on time. He looks great. Looks like a truck. Just ran him over and reversed and ran him over again.
Come on, you guys.
But you know what? Give him a happy birthday. How many times, you know, birthday falls exactly on the day of a show? So we'll see what happens later today. He might go up for a second celebration. But a happy cheer to Michael Brian Remus.
You're not going
to
cheer the end of the lockout?
Man, that was last week. It was Sunday.
That's a cop-out cheer.
That's very 6 days ago, Michael.
That was a pretty hungover comment right there.
What?
Ezzy?
I want to say, first of all, it was a great show today, and I'm very excited for the NHL season to start. I'm obviously cheering Michael. Double bar mitzvah today.
That's true.
26 years old, Michael. You do an awesome job. You also work for do the Rona Roundtable.
I want to take this
opportunity to honestly say you do a good job. You're a good friend. Very happy birthday.
Thanks. Drew, don't cheer me, please.
Don't worry. I'm not going to cheer you. It didn't even occur to me to cheer you for a minute. I'm going to cheer Brian Burke. And I'm going to cheer Brian Burke because there's probably nobody in hockey who's as controversial as Brian Burke is on a regular basis. He's argumentative. He's passionate. He's a jerk sometimes. And but he's always in the headlines, and he always makes things a little bit more interesting when Brian Burke's around. So hockey is worse off when he's not sort of in a front and center role. So I'm going to cheer Brian Burke for both his, you know, both of his personality traits and his personality flaws and everything he brings to the world of hockey. It's going to be a little bit of a worse spot while he's behind the scenes.
You're like kind of the Brian Burke of the show.
No, I would think you guys would just say I'm just worse off than when I'm around.
You didn't cheer. Richie and I cheered Remus, and you didn't cheer Remus.
You know what?
On his birthday.
Selfish.
His double bar mitzvah birthday.
Selfish. Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'm sure that Remus will live with it. He knows that, you know, how, you know, the high standing I keep you in there, Remus.
Yeah, you don't need to cheer me.
Yeah, I mean, I know that when your 26th birthday was 38 years ago, but come on.
Very clever. That's it for this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey, Jeff Angus from Dauber Hockey, and Justin Goldman from the goalieguild.com. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It'll also be available on tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website for the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Next Saturday morning, bright and early, 6 a.m., we get things started with Winnipeg Jets game day prior to the Jets-Senators game later on that afternoon. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Michael Remus, the birthday boy, and for producer Tim, I'm Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for NFL football.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.